well, folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another episode of the Rec Poker Podcast. I am Chris Jones. This is your chats edition. I'm filling in for Jim Reed, who is finally, I think, going to be back home from his big trip to Ireland. I hope we can catch up with him a little bit about that next week, because I think that sounded like a blast that people had over there, and I was very jealous hearing all the updates as we did. But this week we have an interview with Chris Reed, so we'll be talking to Chris shortly. But before we do, I want to remind everyone that it takes more than just your host to produce everything we do at Rec Poker. Rec Poker is mostly a volunteer-based organization, but we do what we do because you're able to sometimes contribute to us as premium members. We also have a sponsor, our Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. And then we have the illustrious Wrecking Crew, who help make the magic happen at Rec Poker. So I would invite our Wrecking Crew to introduce themselves. Usually starts with me, so starting with whoever's first in order. Joe.
I'll go. My name's Joe Coolis. You can find me at Joe Cool PhD on Blue Sky as well as Twitter. And I'm LV11 in the home game. And my responsibility is to run the PsyOps workshops on the third Thursday of every month, where we delve into the psychological concepts that drive your poker game and sometimes push you in directions that you didn't realize.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN everywhere. And it's an interesting fact that Joe, in fact, alphabetically comes before John, but Joseph comes alphabetically after John. Hence Chris's confusion.
See? Yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, thank you. I help organize our home games.
It's a psyops to keep everybody on their toes.
I'm Keith Brandt. That's Monkey System Online. And definitely after the alphabet of both of these fine gentlemen. And I run the Monkey's Off-Table Tools segment every month. In Monkey's Off-Table Tools, we use various study tools like GTO Wizard, and et cetera, basically advanced poker training to study poker and have some fun smashing computer bots.
And I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Rabman50 just about everywhere. And I host a book study on the first and third Wednesdays of every month.
And one of the people who's not here, because she was over in Ireland as well, is Kim Kilroy. She runs our hand history review, but she also runs an occasional poker empowerment group, where she is finding some of the kind of maybe some of the lesser known and some of the more well known women in poker, and doing interviews with them and talking strategy with them. And one of those episodes was with Chris Reed, and that's what we're going to be playing for you in just a moment. So that'll be the interview that you'll be hearing, and then we'll return and we'll go over some home game results and talk about some things coming up at Running Aces. But tune in for the interview right now.
All right. Welcome everyone to our Poker Empowerment Week meeting for the month of May. It's May, right?
Oh, yeah, my God.
Yes,
I get confused with all the traveling and everything else. So I'd like to welcome my friend, good friend, Chris Reed. I was really excited, and I've been trying to get her on here for months and months, but she's finally here. I'm really excited for her to join us because she's a recreational poker player turned pro, something that some of us in this rec poker group aspire to. So I'm going to just try and remember some of the stuff you told me, Chris, because I had it all up here before, and now I don't have it up here. But Chris, when did you turn pro?
How long ago? Oh, at the worst possible time. Just
right before COVID.
Yeah. So I was doing really well, and it was like 6 months in and had great momentum. And then COVID hit. And I had to sit at home and play online, which I truly hate. I like to play live. I want to look at the person I'm playing with. And I just do so much better live. But so I had like the 6-month, 7-month hiatus and used that time to learn mixed games online because I couldn't go in person. So, you know, did a lot of studying.
Fun. Okay. So I think you said your background was in finance and banking. And then when did you get sort of the bug for poker? Like, tell us about your journey. How did you start?
Well, I met this guy named Rick Reed, R-E-A-D, and I met him at a sports bar kind of place. And then I found out that he was up there playing poker 4 or 5 nights a week, just bar poker. And he took me with him. I had not played poker since playing stud at my grandpa's bar. And when I was a senior in high school, I bartended at 17 in Louisiana in my uncle's bar. And I would go in the back with those guys and play poker and bure and play just a hand or two enough, you know, win a big pot and leave because I was 17. They didn't care. But I hadn't played poker in many years. And I sat down to play and there was like 95 people playing and I was the first person out. He had printed out the little thing with what beats what and put it on the back. I had shrunk it down and put it on the back of my phone. And
real-time assistance.
I was livid. I was just like, oh my God, I'm the first person out. And I'm so competitive always in life and everything. And so that whole next week, I read books. I watched it on TV. That's when it was, when was that? 2006. So I think we met in 5. So 2005. And so I was watching on TV every night. And anyway, I went back the next week. I went back with him and I got 12th. Out of 90 something people and just got bit by the bug and just did it here and there. Just bar poker for years. And then I got where I couldn't stand bar poker and I started playing in casinos, got my ass handed to me over and over and over, but finally figured it out. And now my poor husband tells people it's probably the worst thing he ever did was bringing me to poker because he plays poker once a month, maybe, and he doesn't have the patience for the long tournaments that I love. So I leave him 7 to 10 days a month, and he hates it. So, but oh well, he supports me. He loves me.
That's good. Oh, that's good. And you love to travel and play like I do. I know, right? And you just recently, I think, won the ladies' tournament in Malta.
I did.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so that congratulations on that.
It was quite the trip. I played 4 events. I bagged the main, punted the main on day 2. Horrible. Played 1 hand so bad. Took an hour to get my shit together and jumped in the ladies. Won it. And then the next day played the high roller. Stone cold bubbled. Got it 2 outed and stone cold bubbled. Cried like a baby, had a major meltdown, and then made myself go play the last event after I drugged myself out of bed at 4 p.m., so depressed, made myself play it and got 4th out of 274.
Excellent.
It's just a bipolar trip. So
I think that was the Hendon Mob Championship, right? We played one of those recently.
No, it was just called, it was just, there was the Hendon Mob Championship, but I was playing the high roller that day.
The high roller, yeah.
So it was just called The Last Chance, and it was $120 buy-in, but it wound up being $7,000 for first place. That's a pretty good return.
That's a pretty good return. You played in your first main event last year. And
yeah.
I think you were one of Norman Chad's sleeper picks as well, from what I remember.
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience.
I muscled my way into that. I got like everybody I know to send him a tweet. And he literally was like, oh, you muscled your way into this. You got this, you know. But then it worked out very well. He was very sweet. And he came and talked to me every day and checked on my progress and saw like, you know, when I was super low and then grinding back up every day. It was good. I had won a $600 satellite at Harrah's New Orleans a year and a half earlier, literally Mardi Gras weekend, which is the end of February, right when COVID exploded. And so I won the 10K seat and just held it until we could have it. But yeah, so my last hand, not my last hand, the bad hand. I had Jason Kuhn in the one seat. I'm in the two seat. Jason's under the gun. He raises. I look down at pocket aces. I bet a huge three bet, but I've been playing with Jason all day. He's so amazing. And I was, it made me elevate my game because I was not about to let Jason Kuhn see me screw up. So we were playing really well, both of us, all day. And I made a huge three bet to say, get out of my pot. And he told me later he was going to fold to my three bet. He had ace king, but he knew I had something much better. It got around to the end of the table, and this older gentleman from Louisiana, where I'm from, four bet shove, 64 big blinds with pocket sevens. You know the rest of the story. So he hit a seven in the window. I got crippled. He said it was his favorite hand. That's why he did it. Jason did fold before I snap called, and it crippled me. And it was just a little bit before hand for hand. And
so it was on day three or four then, right before the money.
Deep in day three. And I ended up going totally card dead for the next 3 hours. Totally card dead from that moment on. And every hand was three and four bet, you know, with the people that were at my table. But anyway, I had six more hands before I had to put my last chip in. When they were doing the hand for hand, it took an hour and 45 minutes to get five from 1,005 to 1,000. It was crazy. And so I was like, I have six more hands until this last chip goes in. And aces got cracked by ace nine. Everybody cheered. And I put one chip in a bag and cashed for 15,000.
That's a great story.
I was not about to not cash. So it was fun.
Wow.
It was fun. But I think I aged
congrats.
Five.
That's congrats on that. We have one of our own playing his first main event this year.
Yay.
He won a satellite series that we ran. And so I'm sure he'll be looking for some tips later from you.
Oh, yeah. I'm soaking him up.
For prep.
It's the hardest tournament I've ever played.
I think Dara O'Carney would be very proud of you, Chris. Very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And hardest, but also it's the best tournament. Like the structure, the 2 hours levels, like it's just the best tournament.
Yeah, it was definitely very fun. Just getting low and having to come back. And I only sucked out one time, and it was against Barry Greenstein. I had played with him in two other events. And so he was opening light, opening light, opening light. And I looked down at my favorite non-premium hand, if I had one, 9-10 suited. And I was low, and I three bet shoved. He snap called with his ace king. I was like, great. And I rolled over my cards, and he's just like, and I hit the 10 in the window. He bricked, and he leans over to me and he says, I haven't seen you get out of line like that yet. And because we played together for a couple of, and I'm like, I haven't. That was my first suck out. So, but it was good. Barry was very nice about it. So,
yeah, good. Just a little underhanded comment there, just one.
but he had a lot of chips and I had a little bit. So it didn't really hurt him.
Didn't hurt him. All right. So let's talk about women in poker. It's a really hot topic right now. Hot, hot, hot. It's all over social media. You are a big advocate for women in poker. You're always promoting women. You run the Facebook group called Poker Queens, and you're always posting about everybody's successes on there, whether they're little successes or big successes. You do a lot of work, I know, for the WPA. We've had Ruth on here. We've had Lupe on here. So we know a little bit about that. You do some live reporting, I think, for the WPA.
Yeah, I get to interview great people. So I love it.
We're really trying to, like everybody right now, encourage more women to get out and play live poker.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice there? We have a big crowd of men here. Like, let's have some advice on how to get more women out there.
You know, it's such a big issue, and it's got so many facets to it. You know, for younger women, I never could have played poker before my kids were bigger. When I met my husband, I had gotten divorced. My kids were teenagers. And so it was a little bit easier for me to get into it. So, I mean, there's so many different reasons that women don't get into poker. And I think, like, reading Daniel Negreanu's tweet a few days ago, you know, I think he missed the mark on what he was trying to say. I don't think he understood, because he kind of melded, you know, why women don't play with what makes them stop playing. The women who do play, you know, so they're two different things. So, you know, why women don't play, there are tons of reasons: responsibilities, money, children. A lot of women get in much later. And then, you know, you look at like the women who are the big ambassadors for the big groups, the paid ambassadors, you know, it's almost impossible for a woman, no matter how good she is, to get that if she's over 40. If you notice, you know, these, that's just what it is. But once we get the girls, get the ladies to learn about poker and to love poker, then the other part comes in with, how do we keep them playing poker when they sit down and someone is a total jerk to them? I've been called so many names at the poker table. I had a man with my husband there tell me that he was going to go to his car and get a gun at the poker table in Georgia. This is probably about 10 years ago because I beat him in a big hand. You know, there's so many women that when something like that happens, they're not coming back to play poker. You know, they're not going to play poker anymore. So I think there's a reason that the women that you see doing well in poker are mostly business owners, corporate executives, women with really thick skin. And even with having thick skin, if you had read my poker blog today on Facebook, you would be thinking something totally different because of the meltdown that I had in Malta. So I think we just got to keep doing what we're doing as far as encouraging women, having free roles, doing the online and the live poker training. I've done free seminars in Atlanta where we had 26, 28 women come, and you know, the Poker Power, WPA, PLON, all of those things are great. But I think a whole lot of it is once we get the women is really enforcing the rules at the table as far as being men being abusive to women, because that's a big, big part of it. Right. But I don't think there's any secret to it. I think
how do you handle it when you have when you're accosted either verbally or in any other way? Like,
I'm not very nice. I was raised on a little bitty farm in Louisiana. I was super poor, always had to work so hard and feel like, you know, I have the right to be here. I'm a feminist. So when someone is nasty to me, I'm right back nasty to them. Good or bad, I felt really guilty about that before in my life. And I felt like, okay, sometimes maybe that's not what a poker advocate female should do. But sometimes I just can't help it, you know?
So it's natural to you to respond like that, right?
Exactly. I wish I could be the person who takes the higher road sometimes, but usually I give it right back. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm fascinated by your transition from recreational to pro. And what did you do to sort of prep yourself for that? Did you just say one day I'm going to be pro, or did you have a bankroll you started with? Did you do some did you get some coaching? Did you, are you a GTO studier? Like what?
Basically all of the above. I started playing like one or two weekends a month, playing a whole lot more like WPT, WSOP, you know, smaller events, $300, $400 buy-ins, and started playing multi-day tournaments and just preparing myself for, okay, if I want to do this, I know that I'm going to have to play longer tournaments. I'm going to have to be grinding. I'm going to have to be mentally and physically prepared. And I started saving the money that I made from poker and, you know, got a bankroll together. And more than anything, I had major surgery and ruptured some disc in my neck and was having a really hard time driving all the time. Being a sales executive for a big bank, I was on the road a lot. And finally, my husband and I discussed it and finally just said, you know, I think this is the time. I've studied, I've done. I think I can do this. And I think this is a time to try and do it. So, and of course, studied even more and still study every single day, you know, after deciding, pulling the trigger. Now, I make a lot less money now. I'll be honest, you know, this is my, with COVID, this is like 2.5 years in now with COVID. And I had a great last quarter of last year, propelled me really well. This year has started out very slow. So, but, you know, the year's not over.
Are you planning to do a full WSOP schedule or just certain parts of it?
Yeah, I'm planning to go out for 3 weeks and play the Ladies World Championship, the Mini Main, and the Main. And I think I have been really blessed with, while this big learning curve, and it is a big learning curve, grinding on the circuit with these guys and, you know, just seeing, because you play with people who are shooting 10 and 12 bullets into almost every event. And they're winning a lot of events. They're final tabling a lot of events. But I know, you know, they're staked a lot. And I know that, you know, they can't be making that much after shooting all of those bullets. I try to shoot one or two bullets. It makes my play have to be a little tighter, a little more solid. But there's a big learning curve. I've been lucky that I've had friends who want to invest in me. And even like, even though I won my way into the 10K, I still sold 40% of my action because it's such, you know, variance and aces versus sevens. And you know, you just don't know. So, and it always seems to be, and it's fine, that if I'm staked for something, that's when I do something good. And if I'm not, that's when, you know. But I'm the type.
Do you think that you subconsciously play differently when you're staked?
No, I really do not. Because even when I'm not, the people who, like, you know, stake me for things, if in that same series I decide to play something different or play something else, and then I cash good, I still give them money. Most people don't, but I still do, because I'm like, you know, you have faith in me. So if I do something, I'm just going to do it. So, but, it's very challenging. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I mean, by far.
What are your main study tools? Like, what do you mainly?
I watch a ton of poker that's been played. I watch a ton of live. I watch a ton of that. I have pokercoaching.com. I do the, you know, all of the quizzes. I watch all the videos. I do red chip poker. I've studied all the charts. I know all the GTO. You know, I know what I'm like supposed to be playing in each position, you know, those type things. And I really study the players and how they're playing, you know, the psychology of it. I mean, I sit and play very few hands the first couple hours of most tournaments so that I can figure everybody out.
Yeah, that's good. It sounds like you're a nice blend of using your feel for the game and your reads on people, and also sort of a solid base of poker knowledge. Do you have anybody you do hand histories with, or do you go over hand histories like with friends or with coaches or with groups of people?
Yeah, I've had a couple different coaches through the years. I've done hand histories with tons of people, people that I play with in Atlanta, people that I've played with on the road. I won't make his head any bigger than it already is, but one of the guys that just won a bracelet, his first bracelet this past fall, I stayed up one night. I cornered him at like 1 o'clock in the morning after we both busted a poker tournament that we played together at the same table, and picked his brain till 5 a.m. And got lots of knowledge. Like, he told me things that that him and his buddies do at the table that I wanted to know. What are they doing and why are they doing it and how do I beat it? And being a salesperson, I was able to roundaboutly find out that information. So, because I've asked other guys who play with us here in the Southeast who are really good, and I've tried to ask them, and every time I've asked, I get one particular gentleman last time, he said, "You know enough already. I'm not telling you anything," and walked away. So it's good when you can trick them into tell you, but you know, cause you know, guys have that. They do tons of that. They do tons of the hand histories. They do tons of sharing with each other. This particular group works as a team a lot of times. So they share their wins and losses. So of course they're going to share with each other, you know, anytime you have a stable. But it's a lot harder as a woman to try to break into that.
You also play cash.
I do. I played cash mini before tournament.
Do you find it easy to transition to one to the other, or do you prefer to play one at a like just cash, or will you go and play cash after you bust a tournament, or do you, because it's a different mindset, right? It's
totally different. So when I decided to turn tournament pro, I did not play cash for a solid year, whole year. Because in my mind, I needed to firmly cement tournament before I started playing cash again. And because they are such a different game. And I had played tournaments and I had played cash, but I wanted to keep them in my brain totally separate. So I didn't play one hand of cash for a solid year. And I only started playing cash again about a year ago. So that's what I did. But I played cash and loved cash for, you know, other than like bar poker here and there. But cash was the first thing that I really dominated at. And but yeah, they're so totally different.
Okay.
And,
so
and something that people don't realize, and maybe a lot of people do, but I think they don't from watching, is you have to play tighter at cash than you do tournament, a lot tighter. And a lot of people,
I tell people that all the time in my groups, that when you're deep stacked, you got to play a lot tighter than when you get shorter in the tournament, and then you can start opening up your range. So,
yep.
You know,
it's just like in a tournament. At the beginning of the tournament, you want to play super tight. So many of these people play super loose because they have a bigger stack.
Lots of chips.
But it's the opposite. Super tight, loosen up in the middle, tighten up at the end, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think, right. For me, that's what works for me.
I am going to see if anybody that's with us here has any questions for you, Chris. Okay. Jim.
Yeah, I've got, I'm always interested in how people play cash in tournaments differently. Just as that great segue, I'm not going to turn that down. So playing tighter, that's one example. And can you just talk a little bit more about how you might play certain kinds of hands differently, or the different stack depths or something like that, some other factors that you might play differently?
So do you want to know about cash or tournament?
Like the difference between them, how you might do one differently in one versus the other.
Yeah, I think for me, things that are the same, position in both is wonderful. In cash, I am I play much more tight, but when I have the hand, I play much, much, much more aggressive to take that pot down and take that money right there, versus being much more trappy and knowing the percentages and the math on tournament, where, you know, I want them to call behind in tournament. I want them to get, you know, even though you might wind up with a bad suck out, but you know that it's coming if it comes. In cash, I want to take that pot down right then and there. And so I put maximum pressure in cash, you know, money wise. So that's one thing that's different for me between cash and tournament. And I know some people play the opposite, but that's what I do. It's pretty easy to figure out like who the weak players are at the table in either one. It is interesting because sometimes I feel bad if I take some person's money in cash, whereas in tournament, it's just the opposite. You know, it's just, I don't feel bad at all. I want to accumulate those chips to get to the end of that tournament. Versus cash, I'm thinking, was this guy's rent money? You know, that maybe he's super young or he's super old, you know, and I feel kind of bad about it, but I don't know. I mean, maybe if you have specific questions about cash versus tournament.
No, that's exactly it. Sort of like, because I think people don't understand how different pressure can be applied in those kind of circumstances. And I think it's interesting, in tournament, there's this emphasis on not losing your bottom chip. So there's sort of like a different kind of pressure. But in cash, when stacks are so deep, I just feel like, yeah, it's an interesting tension that I like to kind of explore.
Yeah, because if you know, if I get it in ahead and I, you know, shove for his whole stack, yeah, you know, he might suck out on me. I'll just rebuy. I mean, it's just a different mentality altogether. And when I'm not playing well at cash, that's what I'm thinking. You know, I could always pull back out, but you know, I think that there comes the discipline. That comes the discipline in poker, because I find now I'm so much more disciplined at tournament than cash sometimes. So I have to straighten myself out every now and then.
Would you like to see more women's events tournament wise? I mean, there are some, I've been talking to the WSOP stops I've gone to, and the ones that haven't had a women's event are going to start having one at their next, series. So yeah, it's definitely taking off where they're trying. So I heard in Malta that there was a higher percentage of women than there usually is in a tournament series.
I think there was, and I think that was for a couple reasons. I think that we did a pretty good job of promoting the ladies. Yvonne did a good job. Maureen did a good job. I did a good job. Susan did, you know, a lot of us did a really good job of trying to get more. And also the fact that it was in Malta. And it's just such a beautiful place. And a lot of people came for holiday. I think that helped a little bit too. We had a ton of ladies from London. I had played with a couple before, but there were several that I knew through the poker groups, but had never played with, and got the opportunity to play with them in the ladies event. And it was very interesting, the different styles of play, you know, based on geography. So I've also heard that many times before I played with Canadian ladies. I heard from many ladies that, oh, the the Canadians are, they're very aggressive. The Canadian ladies, they like to bluff. They're very aggressive, you know. So it's just fun playing with ladies from different parts of the world and seeing how they play. As everybody here, I'm sure, knows, Kim is an amazing player. I played with her many times.
Thank you. Who has their hand raised? Somebody had it raised. Oh, Joe. That's me. Go ahead, Joe. That's me. Joe.
So, you know, I really wanted to just echo a point that you made. It's a long time ago, back when you were talking about, you know, why women aren't playing. And one of my jobs is I chair a threat assessment team at the hospital that I work with. And I think that men and women, and particularly in the poker world, because I've been shocked at when I have conversations about why women don't play, is that the men don't understand that, yes, you can be threatened when someone says they're going to get a gun, bring it up and shoot you for winning a hand. But all of us can be threatened in that way.
Of course.
But if a guy says, I'm going to grind up on you, the men in the room miss the fact that we see it as a sexual issue and the women see it as a threat. Because if somebody says that to me, I'm not worried that I'm going to get killed in the parking lot or sexually assaulted. And until men, you know, not that I don't think women have a role, but until men are willing to take that understanding in terms of what goes on at the poker table, it's going to be really hard to change, because they're not seeing the problems that you're facing, because you have to be scared every single time you play.
Yeah. I mean, I have a pepper spray gun that anytime that I'm playing anywhere, you know, I have it in my backpack and I have it cocked and in my hand all the time, because you just, I mean, I've had some crazy things happen. I've had some men say really crazy stuff to me, both ways, you know, that really worried me, like really, really worried me, you know, big giant guy tell me, come up to me when everybody's on break and I'm running to the restroom. And I noticed that I see this guy like around a lot in Cherokee, North Carolina, big, big guy, burly lumberjack kind of guy, you know. And when a big guy comes up to you and tells you that you're the reason he comes to play poker there, it's very concerning for a little tiny girl. I mean, it's just very, you can be put off by lots of things. There's lots of things that are said and done that I just don't think guys think about it. Like you said, I just don't think that they realize some of the things that they say, how uncomfortable it makes us at the table. But again,
they don't realize it.
They have, you know.
Yeah, they don't realize it because they have male privilege and they don't understand it. Something that
they start talking about the waitress walking by and they're talking very graphically, you know, and you're sitting at the table. Sometimes that can be very uncomfortable. Also, I mean, it's just there's so many things that go into it that could be better, but you know, times are changing slowly but surely. We're going forward for quite a while. I live in the US, so that, you know, there's lots of stuff always going on here. A lot of men still won't admit there's an issue, as you were saying, you know, they just won't admit there's an issue. So of course they don't have to work on it because it's my problem, not their problem. But it I don't know. I've always just thought it's just something you have to deal with. And I know there's lots of effort being put into it. And I know it's better. I mean, my mother-in-law says back in the 60s, when she used to go to the country club, that women weren't allowed in the poker room. They had a slot machine out front. And that's what they were allowed to do. So, you know, now I'd like to see someone tell me I can't come in the poker room because I'm a girl. You know, it would not be good. But right. So things are getting better. They are getting better.
We are. And the more aware we make people and the more of this stuff is coming out on social media, the better it gets. Harold, you had a question?
Can I just finish one thing up? Because I wanted to.
Sure.
So what would be better in terms, would you prefer it that men step in the moment Would you prefer men stay silent, or would you prefer men get the floor when those things are happening, when people are talking about the waitress, when they're hassling you or harassing you? What would you,
well,
what, as, a, you, as a player?
So I was in Choctaw, Oklahoma, and this guy got into it with another guy. And a few minutes later, I don't even remember what started it, but it was something in a hand. And he was just irate already. And something happened, and he got really nasty with me. And I looked around the table to see, you know, like, is somebody going to say something? This guy's being really, really threatening, nasty, freaking me out. And, you know, no one said anything. When the dealer finally called the floor at my request, and the floor came over, and the dealer did not portray it very well. And he, you know, said whatever and stopped and left. And we went on break like 10 minutes later. When we went on break, the gentleman to my right told me, I'm going to talk to the floor and tell him what really happened. Well, it would have been nice if he did that when the floor came originally. But I understand that the guy who was being very, I don't know what the word is, to me, arrogant, very threatening, whatever the word is, he was a big guy. He was a really big guy with tattoos all over. And I assume that he intimidated, that was what he was doing, he's intimidating me. I assume that he intimidated that guy too. So I didn't, I cut him some slack, and I didn't feel so bad, you know, about him for not stepping up and standing up for me at the moment. But at least he did on break. And that made me feel better. That doesn't happen a lot. Most of the time, men are just silent. And we just deal with whatever we deal with. And no one says anything. So I don't know if it's because they're uncomfortable. I mean, you guys are guys. Why would you let somebody be abused and not say anything? Man or woman.
I mean, I don't, but sometimes I wonder if women, particularly women who've played for a while, prefer to kind of manage things on their own. But I, you know, the truth of the matter is when I really think about it, I'm like, you know, I just need to speak up and not let it happen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind if they let me manage it on my own, but then if the floor comes, I think that's the time to speak up. Okay. Versus, you know, I mean, I know I've played at a table with my husband and no one knew my husband was at the table and someone's been really ugly, you know, and he hasn't said anything because, to your point, he's like, I know you can take care of yourself. I don't want to step on your toes, you know. But I think if the floor gets called for anything like that, that's when you guys should probably say something.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Harold?
Yeah, thanks for your comments about the challenges that you face. I was playing at a local casino last week, and at one time I looked around the table and 6 of the 10 players there were women. But actually, when I think about it now, I think the youngest one was probably in their 40s, and they were 50s plus. So it's interesting knowing your perspective on the challenges. I was just wondering about, you know, do you play any mixed games? Do you have any interest in mixed games? What do you play?
I do. And I wanted to make one more point to what you were saying. Even though I'm in my 50s, you know, even my husband gets harassed because I travel for poker. You know, his friends, acquaintances, they give him trouble, you know. You know, times when we have like got into it about poker, he's like, you know, this person or that person thinks I'm crazy for letting you travel without me, you know, and it's 95% men, 5% women. I can see that perspective some. His reply to them is usually, have you met my wife? I, you know, don't let her. She just does. And, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I think that's the other part too, that a lot of people miss, and we don't talk about it enough, is my husband depends on me more than I depend on him. And I don't know if you guys are married and you would agree with that, but I come home after being gone for 5 or 6 days and there are 5 pizza boxes. He can't cook. he's after 3 days, he's calling me depressed. And so, when are you coming home? I'm lonely, you know? And so, and I think it goes that way with most of the girls who are traveling versus the guys, because the guys are gone and the wives are just fine at home and they're very self-sufficient. So I forgot. I just wanted to make that point too. I think that that has something to do with it too. I would be traveling a lot more for poker, like the same as the guys do, if I didn't feel bad leaving my poor, helpless husband at home. So
I just want to speak up. My wife is out of town at a conference and I'm doing just fine with my kids. Thank you very much.
Are you? Okay.
I've got them fed. The house is clean and they got to school.
And the pizza boxes are in the garage.
You sound like you're doing great. Yeah. So I'm sorry. Okay. So repeat that question. Cause I just went.
I was just wondering about mixed games. If you play and what do you play?
That was one of my goals, like I said, with COVID. And I learned like Badoogie and Do Seven Triple Draw and Stud Eight. I've played Omaha and High Low for quite a while now. Some cash. I like it more than tournament as far as playing mixed games. I'd rather play cash than tournament. But that was one of my goals for this year, and it's just May, so I have a long way to go for the year. But one of my goals for this year is to study and learn and be more proficient at Omaha and Omaha 8. So I do definitely like it. I think it's challenging. Lots of the ladies who live in Vegas that Kim also knows love the mixed games, and they play in tons of the events at the Orleans and now at one of the
MGM,
newer.
I think MGM is going to have a bunch too. Yeah.
Yeah. And one other casino there has been hosting a bunch of mixed games that the ladies go to. Can't think of the name of it, but.
Planet Hollywood, I think.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
Hollywood closed their Sahara. Closed their poker
it's Sahara.
Operations. Sahara does have a nice.
Sahara.
Not a lot of mixed games. And South Point also is a place where a lot of the women play. The flip events are down there.
Yep. Yep. And it was the Sahara I was talking about that I see a lot of the stuff Poker for Breakfast people are talking about. And a lot of the ladies have been playing, the WPA ladies play there.
Right. That's great. What is, as a traveling poker player, it's close to my own heart, your favorite places that you've been, and where would your bucket list places that you haven't been?
I loved playing in Aruba. It was awesome. We were literally at the hotel on the beach where the event center was. So, and the events didn't start till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, just like Malta, so that you could get up, go to the beach, take a swim, shower, you know, do everything before poker, work out right on the beach. It was really good. Ireland was really nice. Really nice. Had a really fun time there. Went heads up for the Ladies Championship, the Irish Poker Open, and a Canadian girl got me. Brigitte, which she's a very good poker player also. I like playing at Pearl River, where I'm heading out tomorrow. I'm going to be playing a main event this weekend, a $600 main event. And Little Kings and Queens in Georgia. Just has an awesome atmosphere. And my bucket list is Playground Poker. I have wanted to go there forever and ever and ever. And I don't think I'll make it this year, but next year for sure.
They haven't brought tournaments back yet. So we're still anxiously awaiting those. So, yeah.
For sure. And I just moved to Biloxi. I'm here on the Gulf Coast, just built a house on the water. I could show y'all. It's so pretty, the water, my surroundings. But we just moved here like 6 weeks ago. And they used to have amazing tournament series here. And because of COVID, they haven't this whole time. But I just heard they're coming back in January. So if you want to come in January, Kim.
Okay. I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm putting it down right now.
My house is 17 feet in the air. I'm on a house on stilts on the water on the Back Bay of Biloxi. And we have a really, really great views. It's really beautiful. But the poker has been very disappointing, the poker tournaments.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But I'm hoping January.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really, a house on stilts. That's amazing.
Wait.
Anyone else have any questions for Chris?
Yeah, Chris, do you plan on doing the Norwegian cruise in December?
I won my way, so I do.
Yeah, I did too, but that was back in 2019, and they moved it up.
Push, but yeah, it's whatever it is, December 1st, 2nd, whatever.
December 4th, I believe, yeah.
Fourth. Yeah. I mean, I've already got it all registered and ready to go, so.
Me too.
Yeah.
See you there.
Should be fun. Yeah. Hopefully I'll do better than last time. I'll do better than last time in the main. Yeah. Because it's a freeze out. And the main, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's freeze out. And I played pretty bad. So, yeah.
I did better at the cornhole toss on the beach than I did in the poker.
That was me. That was me also, yes.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I know you played, and Lisa was there, Michelle. Yeah, I don't know, and the great host that they had. I just don't know. I don't know if anybody ran deep in that main event that we know.
No. I did well a few years ago in 2017.
Right.
And that.
You won it, right?
No, we did a four-way chop, ICM chop. That was third. So.
Yeah, you still did really well then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was my best cash ever.
You're probably going to go every year. That's dear to your heart. Yes.
It is. I am booked, Greg. But I'm not sure. Yeah, sick Greg. I'm not sure with COVID still if it's easy to go on cruises. Because I know Lisa and Michelle just went on one. They had to wear masks the whole time. And it's still very locked down on the cruise ships. So I guess we'll see how it is in December.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, women are doing well. Women are doing really well considering what small percentage we are. You know, I'm always posting, I'm always seeing people, women who are out there kicking butt. So, you know, I think we just got to keep at it and, you know, have a tough skin and cry every now and then. Like I did in
and encourage all our men friends to stand up for us and not put up with any crap at the tables.
Right. Be nice and stand up. And yeah, because, you know, if everybody does, then it'll be good. WPA's got the purple tie guys now, which is a big movement to have the guys in the poker room stand up for us more.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Jim's got his purple tie guy there. He's got his patch.
So you're lucky. You guys all seem like you're, you know, pretty stout. It's kind of hit or miss here. I'm in the South. It's kind of hit or miss. So
I think these guys are from all over the place. So it's only Stuart and I that are Canadian. And Harold. Sorry, Harold. Yeah, but you're out there and you're out in Calgary, aren't you? Like in Alberta. Isn't that the America of Canada?
I think Jim's in Canada too, isn't he?
Yeah, Jim is. Okay, never mind. We're all from Canada except
there's a lot of Canadians on this call. Yeah.
Except who?
Rob? I'm in Arizona.
Yeah. And Joe is
Connecticut.
Yeah.
Okay. So well, that's good.
Anyway, yeah. I'm gonna wrap this meeting up. And we're gonna at least stop the recording. And I wanna thank you very much for giving us your time. And if anyone that watches this, because this goes on our YouTube channel, wanted to reach out to you or find you, where would they find you? Twitter, Facebook?
So I have a Facebook blog, and it's Chris Reed, R-E-A-D, poker player. And my Twitter is also Chris Reed, poker player.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you.
Anyway, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we'll hopefully get you back again. And I will definitely be seeing you in Vegas.
Yes. Let's crush it.
Yeah.
All right. We're back. So if you want to learn more about the Poker Empowerment Group at Rec Poker or some of the other things that we do in that space, please check out the Wrecking Crew page or the Poker Empowerment page. But I'm really grateful to Kim for doing this interview series, and it was great to hear from Chris Reed there. For those of you in the chat right now, go ahead and get your food bank entries into the chat. Start entering those food bank entries. We'll be gathering those names up as we close out the episode. For now, John, I was going to turn it over to you and see if you can tell us about the home game results.
Well, of course I can tell us about the home game results. On April 3rd, we had our No Limit Hold'em Championship Series. This is a series where we keep track of points every month, have one tournament a month, and your top 10 scores count towards the Player of the Year points race, and you earn a bronze pin if you win that Player of the Year points race. Spot Conlin, Daniel Kennedy, won the No Limit Hold'em event, the first one this year, and El Tahoe has taken the lead in the points race for that. He, I think, got third place or something like that this last
month. Well, congrats to both of them. Particularly, you know, that's a name I'm not that familiar with. So congratulations to that. And congratulations to Spot Conlin, Daniel Kennedy, who was, I think, rightfully annoyed that nobody remembered that he was the gold pin, the solo gold pin winner in Rec Poker. Well, I guess Rob did remember. But yes, most of the panel had forgotten or at least been remiss in recognizing the great Daniel Kennedy and his gold pin.
Well, in my defense, I cannot possibly remember every win that I report on because, you know, there are hundreds of them, although only one gold pin winner. So you'd think maybe I would, but.
Well, to give you a break there, John, the only reason I remember is because Daniel and I were talking poker before there was a Rec Poker. So I've known Daniel for a long, long, long time. So when he won it, it was a significant event in my memory. Otherwise, I would have never remembered.
Well, I think that if you go to PsyOps' most recent episode, Keith can attribute the fact that is actually something we talked about the difficulties when there are similar patterns of memory of being able to pick one out and be able to say, oh, this is the one that it is. And so it takes certain stimuli to come in to activate that pattern in order to recall it successfully. So John, your brain is just like everybody else's and you're allowed to make those mistakes periodically with apologies to Spot Conlin.
You know, saying my brain like everybody else's, I don't think I've ever been so insulted in my life.
I feel like we just got a doctor's note that sort of excused our behavior.
Yeah.
So like I'm taking it. I'm running with it.
I got a stamp saying it's okay to be an idiot.
Yeah.
But that does bring up a good point that the gold tournament is going to be on April 17th, the third Wednesday of the month. So anyone who has ever won a silver pin, however you want it, if you have a silver pin, you get to play in the gold for the gold tournament. There's only 44 people who have actually qualified for that. And tonight, there could be one more, depending upon whether we get a repeat winner or a new winner for the Tournament of Champions series tonight.
And your name will ring in the annals of history for forever and ever and ever.
Yes, and no one will ever forget your accomplishment or know how to forget that you were the second Go for the Gold winner.
Yes, ever. Exactly.
Okay, then on our nightly series, April 1st, Trey 371, Thomas Pena, got his first international victory, or his first nightly victory, not international, sorry, nightly victory. A Really Mad Guy, got his second nightly victory for the year. Now you said it, Joe got his fourth international victory for the year. And Keck Geek 65, who is currently private, Even though that is Keck Geek Jr., and I think most people already know his name, got his first international victory for the year. And then John Lancer won the LPP event, so he can contact info at rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker.
All right. Well, I'm seeing we have a couple names of in the food bank raffle here. So I've pulled out my trusty box car, and I think we'll just go 1 through 3 for the RRCC and 4 through 6 for Evil Roy. That sounds good to everyone?
Yep.
All right. We're going to have to base it on trust because I'm not going to pull up my camera and do all this. So it is a 5, which means Evil Roy Slade can be, you can contact info at rec.poker to claim your prize. And I think we had one in particular, but you'll find out when you contact us.
So you're saying there must be some sort of prize. Hosts often say things like that. Yeah, that's how
they kind of throw these things off.
Yeah.
So with that, does anyone have anything else they want to add to this week's episode? No. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank. Oh, I want to say one last thing. MSPT coming up at Running Aces, April 18th through 28th. This is a big deal. This is one of the biggest tournaments in Minnesota that you can play. Big prizes. People travel here. It's a great event. They run it well. Come on down, give it a shot. And they've got, if 1100 is too much out of your buy-in range, they have smaller events throughout the week. They've got a mystery bounty. They've got a tag team game. They've got a lot of number of different offerings, plus satellites, and they're doing the milestone satellites. So those are a great deal too. So come on down, check it out. We'll see you at Running Aces, April 18th through 28th. And with that, I want to thank John, Joe, Rob, Keith, all the listeners who make the magic happen, and Running Aces Hotel Racetrack and Casino, and everyone else who tuned in tonight. Thanks for tuning in.